Hello and welcome to episode 95.
Wow, did you just turn 14?
Yes. Wow, did I just go Bobby Brady there? That is...
That doesn't happen to me because I have a silky smooth radio voice.
Yeah, and a face made for radio.
Yeah, that too.
And welcome to episode 95 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. My name is Alan in Tubingen, Germany. And with me, as always, is
Adam
in
Vancouver, British Columbia. I was waiting for that.
We'll get it
right. I just
was
hoping we'd go for a long, awkward silence.
Yeah, no, that's what this podcast should be called. Hey, have you heard the new episode of LAS? Oh, yeah. Yeah. Good.
Wow, you're pretty quick on the abbreviations.
Mm-hmm. We call them acronyms.
Oh, yeah. I would have had to write that all down.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm good like that.
Get back to you next week.
Yeah. So what's going on, Adam?
Not much. It's fall is upon us, and it is rainy and cold all of a sudden in Vancouver. It's like the switch got flipped, and it's not so nice around these parts.
Oh, how about you? We went the other way. The weather, it actually got ridiculous a couple days ago. Like, we had fall.
In the warm way.
Yeah, the fall had reared its head, the cold weather came, and then it flipped a switch back. So it went from, like, you know, 6 degrees one day to 24 degrees the next day.
Wow.
And that was, we were sweating, so that was crazy. But we'll talk about that in the What Did You Shoot This Week section.
Yeah, do you think people, like, you know, they really tune in at the beginning to hear what the weather is like in Vancouver and in Tubingen?
I think they do. Some people just listen for that and then turn the show off. Like, okay, got it. It was warm this week. Mark it down. Dear diary.
Yeah, I can see that the elderly husbands yelling over to their wives, "Hey, it's beautiful in Germany this week."
Yeah. Yeah, because they have the technology figured right out. Yeah. Does your dad know what a podcast is?
I think he does.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's it. You asked me a question. I gave you a direct answer. Yeah. Hey, you know, at my work, I guess at one point, again, I'm a physiotherapist for those that don't know that, but at my work, we have a computer. So there,
ooh, fancy.
We use that for scheduling of patients. But anyways, I had it open and I was looking at something to do with the Two Hosers last week, and I guess I left it open. Yeah. And some of my colleagues thought it was kind of amusing, and so they printed out a big picture, the picture that you used for the playing card that you used for me, that, you know, says Adam Schwartz and has the amateur status and blah blah blah. So it was printed out very large and placed in my spot, and they thought it was quite funny.
Nice.
And then they said, "You're not going to take it down or anything?" No, I said, "No, I like it. I like the picture. I'm leaving it here."
Whenever I go into the Apple store, I just go to, like, all of the big bank of laptops and just put the Two Hosers site up on every one of them. And then just stand there going, "What?"
That's a good move. Do you want to know that I've been doing a surprising amount of marketing just in the world of physiotherapy? Patients have been telling me that that they're camera people and interested in stuff, and I've been turning them towards our podcast, and they've been telling me that they've been listening. So there's that.
Just shout out to them. Right now.
Yeah, shout out to anybody. Well, they're probably starting way back.
Right.
And probably not to current, but...
Do you want me to go back and re-edit some shout outs to them into the shows?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
That sounds reasonable.
Yeah. So there you go. I'm trying to do my part because I know you carry business cards wherever you go and you hand them out to people. I'm just saying I'm starting to run low on our business cards.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'll get more. Not what you wanted to hear.
Yeah. Can't wait.
No, I've already dumped a bunch in the ditch. Come on, like Penny Saver.
Yeah.
Okay, we have a listener question.
Great.
And that you're gonna be able to help with, so that's great.
I love helping.
Neil from Kent. That's in England.
Oh, okay.
You've heard of it. I think it's where Robin Hood lived or something. Okay. He wants to know about adding a second flash.
So he has one.
Well, that's unclear to me. I think he might have one in the mail.
Okay.
So without doing his entire biography here, he has a T3i, which is a 600D over here in Europe. Same yep. camera, different name.
Yep.
And I think he's ordering a 430 or got one in the mail or something like that. But he wants to add an additional off-camera flash.
Okay.
So what are his options? So I told him, you know, a couple different options.
So was he planning on triggering that 430 just using the pop-up flash, the wireless triggering from the T3i? Because it does that, right?
It does that. That's the thing is we hadn't even – the way he was describing his needs was it was very similar to something that I described from a couple of weeks ago at the wedding when I was going to shoot, you know, blast the backlight across the dance floor and have an on-camera flash to fulfill.
Okay.
So he wanted to do something like that. So he wanted to use an on-camera flash in addition. So and that's something that doesn't come up with me very often, but when it does, it's nice to have.
Right.
So for me, it wouldn't be a deal breaker. But anyway, so that's kind of what he was thinking. But I don't think he knew that the pop-up flash would trigger the 430.
Okay.
So that's one option. But if you wanted to add a second flash to that, how would you go about that? Like, what's a cheap option? I mean, you now have to buy another Canon branded flash, which are kind of expensive,
right? Or you could just buy the triggers.
You could buy the triggers. So I'd said to him, you know, pick up the Cactus triggers.
Yeah,
like you have because they're cheap. You like them?
Yeah, they're cheap, and they come as a pack of two. So you'd actually try to think. You'd have to buy two sets.
In that case, yeah.
Yeah. So I think there you can pick them up for in Canada anyways, you can pick them up just from your local camera store for between, I don't know, $80 and $100 at most places.
Mm-hmm.
But you'd need two sets because you have one trigger that's gonna go on the camera body, one that's gonna go on each flash. So that's three, but they only come in packages of two. So you need to buy two packages. And then you could even add a third flash at some point, like I did. So I am working off of two packages of the Cactus V5 triggers, which I do like. But I did we've been talking about these a bunch, and I do want to point out the shortcoming of these because it's become more and more apparent to me that the plastic on them is very cheap.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you mount a because the flash mounts on top of the trigger, and the trigger mounts to your flash stand, or if you put it right on your camera, it mounts on top of your camera. But because we were talking with Amber and last time too about mounting a flash on top of your camera to use, you know, as flash from the camera, if you do that with the trigger on it on the camera,
mm-hmm.
it is a lot of weight for the flash on top of that trigger. So if you turn your camera sideways and up, it feels like it's going to break the trigger.
Which best case scenario, like if over time if your trigger wears out and breaks, not the end of the world.
No.
If your $400 flash is residing on that when it breaks,
yes,
you're going to cry.
Yes.
But you're a crybaby, to be fair.
Yes. No, but I had that concern. I could actually see the plastic roof, you know, when I turn the camera sideways with the weight of the... Not so much when it's up and down, it seems mm-hmm. okay, right?
Yep.
But as soon as you turn your camera sideways,
right.
Now that weight is hanging off of the roof of that flash, or no, of the roof of that trigger,
mm-hmm.
and it looks like it's going to pull it right off. So I quickly decided I'm not shooting in that orientation because... It doesn't work for me. And I never noticed this because most of the time I just have the flashes mounted on the light stands
mm-hmm.
or holding in my hand or in someone else's hand. So I hadn't really used this orientation enough to realize that it is not a safe one for these triggers.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought of that because I used the Alien Bees version, which they don't have a hot shoe mount.
Right.
So it's just a strap-on situation, and that might be something to think about is in that regard.
And what are the high end ones that Pocket Wizards? The Pocket Wizards I see now that some of the newer Pocket Wizards have the same mounting that the Cactus ones do, so that the flash mounts directly on top of them now. And I'm wondering, I mean, they must be, because you're paying top dollar, they must be a lot sturdier in this regard. But that's my one complaint is that, if you're buying the cheap ones, be careful about how you're mounting them and what kind of weight your flash is pulling on top, because they are plastic and I can see that they will break.
Right. So, yeah, I've never had the Pocket Wizards in my hands, but I would be very surprised if they weren't sturdy.
Rock solid. Yeah, I know, I would think so, too.
So, yeah, well, that's one of the options I'd considered, you know, saying, because the good thing about having these cactus triggers is that you can add as many as you like. You can add all kinds of cheap, used flashes into your system without having to worry.
Exactly.
Now, they're not ETTL.
No.
So, you know, that's good and bad. I mean, if you want to use full ETTL, well, you're going to have to spend a little bit of money.
But my argument would be that I think it makes you a better photographer, and I think it helps you learn flash. If you just take ETTL right out of the equation, you can always add it back in.
Yes.
But, I mean, I think my learning curve for flash was, like, just way faster, because you're forced to when you don't have the use of ETTL, is to kind of, like, use as a crutch, right?
Yeah. I feel the exact same way. So the other thing I would look at, in this situation, I think what I would do is I would look for a used Nikon SB26 to add in. Because it sounds to me like Neil's not going to be shooting in this scenario all the time. Like, if he's going to be shooting an event like this every week, then you're going to want to get the Pocket Wizards and really go with it.
Yeah.
But if you're not, if it's a situation of, I'm going to do some off-camera flash, well, I can use the built-in flash to trigger it. And then in the situation where I need to have an on-camera flash, in addition to an off-camera flash, well, that comes up once a year.
Right.
So if you get a used SB26, it has a little, basically like a little visual firing device, meaning every time it sees a flash, it will just fire.
Right.
So you have your on-camera flash that works as in ETTL mode, bouncing off the ceiling or whatever you're doing. It will, not only will it light your scene, it will trigger your off-camera flash across the room. Now, it's full manual. All it does is just trip it. So you have to set it yourself, and all it does is trip. Downside being that every time someone fires off their little point-and-shoot with a flash, that flash is going to go.
Right.
Which could be fun, because a lot of people who won't notice it will wonder why their pictures look awesome.
Sure enough.
So that's what I would look into. So in this situation, I think I would shy away from the cactus triggers just for that reason. Like, they're kind of redundant, and in the one situation where they aren't, I think they're a little flimsy for what you want to do.
Okay.
That's what I would recommend.
I think it's a good recommendation. And for people who want to trip multiple flashes cheaply and practice with off-camera flash, I think it's a great starting point.
Yes.
For a lot of people, just because they are cheap, and then you figure out whether or not you like off-camera flash, and if you don't, well, it wasn't a big investment, and if you do, you can always upgrade at some point, which I probably will at some point when I break the ones that I've got.
There you go. Yeah, so I do recommend them in that situation, but if you're going to be having your camera on your flash on your camera with the cactus triggers a lot, then I would say no. It's good. You're going to be up for some disappointment really quickly.
Agreed. I completely agree, 100%.
Okay. What'd you shoot all this week?
I can't remember since the last time we spoke. I'd already been to the pumpkin patch, right? We talked about that. The only thing I think I shot were my challenge. I haven't taken any pictures since last weekend. So we did our podcast, and then I shot some on the weekend. I haven't shot anything since. So just the pumpkin patch. The challenge picture at the skating rink. I went to the skating rink, so we'll get to that, I'm sure. But I don't want to spoil it all right now. But I shot pictures at the skating rink. That's what I shot.
Great.
Yeah, how about you?
Well, speaking of pumpkin, my wife made a pumpkin pie for the first time ever.
Was it delicious?
It was unbelievably delicious. Now, it's not like, you know, I mean, she bakes and stuff. It's just that pumpkin pie isn't exactly a thing here in Germany.
Okay.
But I had suggested, hey, you know what you might like, and also I would like, is pumpkin pie. And so she made it from scratch, got a pumpkin, did the whole, you know, boiled it, and what, I don't know, it came out magically in a pie shape. I don't know. I don't know how it all happened.
It just gets that way.
That's why I got married.
Yeah.
if I could do that, you know, be single.
Right.
That's not true. So I shot a photo of her pumpkin pie, which was really nothing to do with photography. I just wanted to say that she made a pumpkin pie. It was awesome.
Good.
We had the glorious weather I talked about. Like, it was...
So you took...
I don't use the word glorious often.
Yeah.
It was that good. Like, the weather was just unbelievable. And so, which led to one of the greatest sunsets. Not, I mean, I don't mean in terms of location, because I've been, you know, you've been to the ocean and stuff like that, and sunsets in Vancouver down at Kitts Beach are amazing.
Yeah.
But in terms of light and the magic hour, the light created at magic hour is probably the best I have ever seen this one day.
Okay.
We're there at my in-law's house, and they kind of live out sort of in the country, and so the sun setting over the forest with, and then into the big field, like the light was just great. So I grabbed my kid, and I just basically ran off to the countryside.
Just sounds like a weird nursery rhyme.
Except none of it rhymes.
Okay, well, I was waiting for the rhyming part.
Yeah, no. We ran off the countryside, and I basically just wanted her to run around in the knee-high grass. Well,
yeah.
I guess waist-high with her, but some of it knee-high.
Okay.
And I wanted her to run around, and basically I just ran around and snapped as many pictures as I could in the 10 minutes I had, the window I had.
Right.
In this time. And basically she gave me a three-minute window of how much she could tolerate.
Right.
And hit the wall quickly. But in that 3 minutes, I was able to grab a lot of just really some of my favorite shots I've shot in a long time.
And what did you shoot with?
The 70 to 200. That was it. Natural, just all natural light. Like, it was just...
On the 5D?
On the 5D.
Yeah.
And so did some lens flare stuff. Are you looking at the lens flare picture now?
I looked at it earlier, so yeah. I know which one you're talking about. Do you want me to look at it right now?
No, you don't have to. That's the one. That's the one I'm referring to. I popped one in there to refer, and I'll decide whether I'm going to put it on the website or not.
It's a very nice picture.
Yeah. So it was just, I was really thrilled, and I guess because generally at this time of year you don't get this kind of weather. So any sunset, normally you're dressed up in sweaters and whatnot, but just, I guess because it happens at, I'm guessing this was about 6:30 or 6:45 or some whatever time the sun sets here now.
Yeah.
And so I was thrilled with the results there.
Okay. And then, I think it's a great picture. I think you should post it.
And then lastly, I tried, because there's a bunch of family there, I tried the old Schwarzini run-in group photo.
Right.
I don't think I did a very good job.
You didn't post the picture, so I don't know.
No, I don't think I need to post it. You just assume that I'm right and that I didn't do a good job.
It was because of the run-in? Like, were you still, like, sweating when you got there? Or?
It was, well, first of all, it was very hot, so yeah. And we'll need to talk about, we're going to do a show about group shots in the future.
Okay. I would love to do a group shot episode, because I'm sure there's a lot that you could teach me.
Oh, I was going the other way with that.
Oh, really?
I was hoping to learn a bunch.
Okay, well, then you're in trouble.
Yeah. So, yeah, the one thing I noticed about the group shot is be careful where the shadows are going to fall on you. You can get everybody else lined up great, and I did. And then I ran in and didn't realize that I was just going to get some leaf shadows in the mouth. Oh. So... there was that. You know, and the one thing I noticed about the group shot, and maybe you'll tell us about this in the future episode, is that I think everybody in the group shot should give you 5 minutes of patience.
Yes.
At least. That's all I'm asking for, 5 minutes of being quiet.
Yeah, and you know, the whole thing is when I do this, I usually spend a good 10 or 15 minutes setting up even before I get anyone in, just to make sure that it's going to take the minimum possible time when they get there. And so I really don't like getting chirped when it takes, you know, 4.5 minutes to get it right when you're dealing with, you know, six or more children under the age of 5.
But they're not the ones doing the chirping.
Yeah. No, but it's like, you know, everybody else chirps you for that.
Yeah. No, I agree. And my new method is that I'm going to use Photoshop to make them look fat in the photos. Oh, sorry. Guess your hips look a little wide.
Giant blemish in the center of their forehead.
I'm going to go, yeah, exactly. I'm going to Photoshop stuff in. That's what I'm going to do from now on. So I would be really, really nice to me. That's oddly.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's what I shot. Photo challenge this week.
You're going to have to sort of remind us what it was, because I can't remember exactly how it was posed.
Last week we talked, the show was all about details, shooting small details of your trip, of your day, of your kids, of whatever it is that right. you're doing to shoot right. something personal. And that's what it was. I had originally pitched the boudoir photos of your wife
right.
as a thing. So now all the ones I took are just going to go to waste. Just kidding, they're not.
Okay.
I'll post those
on the
site.
Internet's for, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, they're out there. You can Google them.
I think there's a website probably, adamswife.com.
Oh, I would assume there is.
There's probably that for everybody's name. Just go to alswife.com and check out the photos.
Oh, yeah.
People are going to do that, you know?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. People just do whatever we say. We have that kind of Svengali power over them.
That's right.
Obviously. Yeah. So this was the detail shot. So let's have a look at your. You want to start?
Sure, I can start.
Okay, let's start with yours.
Okay, here it is. It's my son Jack. I told you we went skating. Mm-hmm. This is at the skating rink. I set out to take a picture that was going to be different than I think the idea was. You know, like you go skating and it's really easy. The pictures that you expect are obviously the ones skating, right?
Right.
So skating on the ice with the typical things that you're going to see in the background. So I didn't want to do that. I mean, I took some of those photos, but I had no intention of using that kind of photo for the challenge because this was about some of the details. So kind of what I wanted was something that to me says arenas. In my growing up, I spent a lot of time in the hockey arenas, and so I try to take this photo from an angle where you'd see some of that from up close.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted the sort of the big latch lock on the boards where you come in and out of the ice, so you can see that just kind of over Jack's left shoulder. So I wanted that, but I didn't want that to be the focus of the picture. I just wanted that to be a detail in the shot.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wanted to shoot up because I wanted to sort of see like the stands in the back behind them and the weird kind of blue and white kind of color that every hockey arena in the world seems to have, this kind of color scheme.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to get a bit of the boards, like the metal and glass panes in behind them. And there was an orange, you know, long standing pylon, and I just kind of moved that, you know, into the other side because I kind of, you know, those things are around hockey arenas, and I thought, okay, I'll just place that on the other side because that's another thing that's always familiar. So that's what I did, and then you've got like the painted black pole that, again, these kind of railings run all throughout hockey rinks, and they're, you know, the paint's coming off, it's chipped, you can see that it's black, but there's like red chips all through it. I bounced a flash off of a roof. He was sort of standing and there was a very low roof, so it worked out from the standpoint of lighting. I just aimed the flash up and sort of behind me and just got a nice bounce of light that illuminates his face nicely. So
great.
And I took this photo and at the rink, and I didn't really check the LCD screen or anything. I just kind of thought, okay, exposure looked good, and I went home. And, you know, whether or not you tear this photo down, I got this photo up, and I was like, I love this photo. Like, mm-hmm. I will get this photo framed, and just because it just sort of captured all of those things that I wanted. And, you know, he's just got a nice smile, and I like the Canucks glove. So, yeah, there it is. I'm gonna pump my own tires before you take any shots at this.
No, you're pretty much bang on. Like at first glance, this photo from a technical standpoint is kind of meh. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You got a lot. You got the pole growing out of his head, even though it's blurry. You have that orange pylon in the back is kind of ugly. You got all these things that are just kind of, until you get into all the things you just said, and it nails it. And this means something, like this photo. So this is where technical prowess goes out the window.
Yeah.
You know, and the fact that you did all these things on purpose, even better, because this does include that. Like, if you had eliminated the background and just basically photoshopped your son out of it, photoshopped the back, kept your son in and the background gone, I would know where he is strictly by that metal pole.
Yeah.
So to me, that means that is something very personal to me as well, because I grew up at the hockey rink as well, because my parents kicked me out of the house. No, they didn't. No. Metaphorically, I grew up at the hockey rink, same as you did. Different rink, different, you know, side of the country.
Yeah.
But it does tie it together. Like, the hockey rink is a hockey rink. you know? So that that is a big thing. You're right, that cone in the background, more so in the last 10 years than when I was a kid, but they are around now.
Yeah, they changed the shape of the cones.
Right. But you're right, the big latch on the door, everything, all the elements that you just talked about that end up making this, I would say, a somewhat cluttered picture, all speak to the very nature of what you're taking a picture of.
Exactly.
So this does, and you're right, the Canucks glove, everything about this just says hockey ring to me. So in that regard, I think it's a great picture.
Thank you. And like I said, I realized that the picture was cluttered, but I intentionally did that because I was trying to get the details. And normally I wouldn't bother, right? Or I would try to blur the background out entirely.
Mm-hmm.
But just went about it a different way because, again, our talking last time sort of made me think that sometimes I just don't do this sort of photo.
Right. Now, that's the thing. That's kind of what I'd like to encourage is to take these more personal photos to remind you of what was, you know, what it was like. Now, you look at this picture in 10 years, you know, to play the glurge card, but I think it'll be, you know, it'll remind you of a lot of what it was like to go skating with your kid.
Absolutely, and that's why I'm going to get it framed.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay, so mine wasn't as personal.
All right.
I kind of went for a more detailed shot and more of an artsy approach, and at first glance, I'm going to go ahead and sandbag it again. At first glance, I was like, my picture's clearly better, but yours will mean a lot more than mine will to me. I mean, mine's real, like, you know. So let's talk about my picture here first of all.
Okay,
it's baseball season, baseball playoffs.
Yeah,
that we're watching on television. I bought my daughter her first baseball glove. I grew up playing baseball, in addition to hockey, not to give the impression that I was a good hockey player, by the way. Just because I grew up at the rink does not mean I was good.
Right.
I mean, worldwide, like if you think all the people in the world, I'm pretty good.
Right. If you're basing people who've never played or seen,
yeah, like a lot of Somalians, and I'm better than them.
Right.
Most of them. But then when you start focusing on, okay, what about in Canada? Is Alan good? Nah, I'm still halfway decent in all of Canada. Like, not half, like, you know, above average, I would say, if you're taking into account all 30 million people.
Right.
Because a lot of them are elderly. And then you focus on, like, our group of friends.
Yeah.
I'm really bad.
Because there's a lot of good players in there.
Well, you know, we have friends that played pro and you know, college hockey, junior hockey and that. And one of our friends was actually scheduled to make his NHL debut in the second half of a Devils game, and then Martin Brodeur had a shutout, and they left him in for the whole game. True story.
True story. I know that story.
Yeah. So in that regard, not a good hockey player.
Right.
So anyways, but I grew up playing baseball, and, you know, for a lot longer than hockey, and so I recently bought my one-year-old a baseball glove. I'm that guy who's kind of forcing it on her.
Right.
But she seems to like, I don't know if she likes to play with it or likes to eat it or whatever it is. She enjoys her baseball glove and the ball. And so I have my glove and she likes to sort of, in some respect, play catch, which involves a lot of the floor and the ground. So we were doing that one day and so I snapped this shot to commemorate that. So we have the brand new glove there. We have my old glove sort of in the background. We have some fall leaves that were on the ground to indicate the time of the year, and that's the detail shot.
Okay, so my only complaint, because I really like this photo, my only complaint is I had no idea that based on the way you position the gloves,
yes,
like they would both look like adult gloves to me, or both look like kids' gloves. I can't tell that there's a size difference. I wish that the angles or something did that, because I did not know what this was about until you told me that story.
I understand, and believe me, this was not the first and only layout I did. I couldn't make it work. I mean, one thing, I have my glove itself is actually on the small side, and it always has been. There's no real. I never liked using the large outfielder's glove when I played,
right?
And so my glove is on the small side anyway, so it's difficult to show the difference.
You know what they say about outfielders with small gloves, though, right?
They can run fast. Right. Which I can't do either. But there's that. So anyways, yeah, you're absolutely right. And so this was the best of it too. And so I kind of wanted to hint that that was my glove in the back. And look, one of them's brand new, one of them's older, so maybe that would say something.
But I can't tell that either.
No, you're right. And so I think much in the way that people who hang around the hockey rink would identify with your photo, I think if you grew up playing baseball, no, it's very specific. You would sort of make that identification a little bit quicker. It doesn't hit you over the head like, you know, sticking a traffic cone in behind your kid or nothing like that. So it's a thinker.
I like the photo. I like your photo. Don't get defensive.
It's a,
I like
it's a think photo. Piece.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
All right.
There you go. That's the photo challenge.
All right.
This week's topic, the old blue and orange. That's what we're going to talk about.
Great.
The New York Mets.
Yes.
No, we're not talking about
New York Islanders.
Islanders are also blue. I was trying to think of another blue and orange team for that reason, and I couldn't think of one.
Yeah.
I gave myself a good 15 seconds to think of it and then stopped. So there's that. No, but it's about color palettes. Have you ever heard of a color palette?
Sure.
Like, for instance, I'm an autumn.
Okay.
Really? I don't know what that even means, man. I was just joking.
No, but they do that. I remember as a kid, my mom having some lady over to do her colors, and like there's a thing. I don't know what it is or how it's done, but yeah. it was an evening of putting out colors and figuring out what kind of color you are.
Yeah, the key to that story was your mom, okay? Not me. Not your co-host partner and manly man.
No.
Co-host partner?
No, that's true.
Podcast
true.
Co-host, something. I don't know. Mom. Right. So... no, but there are certain certain colors go together well. Certain colors mean different things. Have you ever seen a movie called Rebel Without a Cause?
No, but I know what it is.
And what does James Dean wear in the movie? It's a very famous
leather jacket and a white T-shirt.
A white T-shirt and a red jacket.
Was it red?
It was red. And it was long story short, they were going to shoot that movie in color. Except for his career kind of blew up. Or sorry, they were going to shoot that movie in black and white because color was expensive.
Right.
And but just before they started filming, he went from unknown to a huge sensation, and they decided to spend the money on color. And when they did that, they wanted to, you know, give off the impression that, okay, this main character, he's a bad boy. He's dangerous.
Right.
Give him a red jacket. Red means danger. So that's one, you know, one way to look at colors.
Red is dangerous.
Red is dangerous. Well, that's other things mean other things, but that's one of them.
Okay. So I didn't know that red was dangerous.
Well, if you look at the movie, it's not so dangerous anymore, but it doesn't hold up. Anyways, but so one of the most common color situations or color palettes that I want to talk about on the show, because it happens around this time of year naturally, is blue versus orange.
Okay.
Now we see this you see this in nature a lot. In the northern hemisphere, I should specify, because it's autumn here. But we hinted at it, like, I think last week or the week before, but you do notice this when you're out shooting this time of year and when it's sunny, you get nice golden sunshine.
Yes.
But your shadows tend to be very blue. Or when the sun sets and now all of a sudden everything's kind of, you know, in shadow, it's a lot more blue than it was in, say, July.
Yes.
Okay. The end.
I noticed this. You know where I noticed it the other day? And I took some photos. We were in a restaurant with the kids, and we had just come from a Halloween performance, so the kids are in their costumes. So I had the camera with me because I was taking pictures at this show that we went to where the kids were in costumes. Anyways, long story short, we're sitting in a restaurant right near the window, and in behind the kids is that very, I don't know, orangey light that you get from a lot of the whatever the fluorescents they're using are.
Okay.
And we're sitting in the window, and it's about, I don't know, 5 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And the light coming in from the window is very blue. So when I took the shot, I saw, this was right after we had had our last podcast. We were talking about, you know, the blue and the orange effect. But saw it clearly, saw the blue from the window light on the, that was lighting the kids, and then the really, really orange background behind them, and sort of the cool slash warm, you know, quick temperature change within the photo.
Mm-hmm. It really is, can't think of, it's really ramped up this time of year. And another good example is, like, we talked about baseball. I mean, you watching any of the postseason baseball games?
I am.
During the day, like they usually start sort of in the late afternoon right now.
Yeah.
And so they'll start in sort of declining sunshine. So part of the field in the stands will be lit by the sun, the golden sun, and then part of the field will be in shade. And so you'll notice on the white balance, like the cameraman must be going crazy, because anytime they have to track a play from the home plate out into the field, you go from very, very blue to very, very golden.
Right.
And so you'll notice that, you know, at earlier in the game, that the players, the pitchers and the catchers will look sort of like a blue tinge to them for that reason, because they kind of have to go in the middle and sort of pick a white balance that's going to work for both.
I'm going to look for that now.
Later in the game, as the sun sets entirely and the stadium lights are now dominant and consistent, they can white balance for that. Everybody looks like rock stars.
Okay.
So there you go. So what kind of feelings, like the good thing about this is that it sort of, it's because it's built in to nature and all this stuff, it tends to generate a certain set of feelings. Like different colors can give you red being danger, callback. Right. What about blue? Like what kind of a cool blue, what does that denote?
I don't know. It's kind of dreary, sad.
There you go. You're not alone in feeling that way. I mean, there's other times blue can mean other things in certain situations, but generally just cold.
Yes.
Like if you're outside and it's cold out. What about the other way? What about, you know, oranges and yellows?
Warm, happy, comfort.
Now that's pretty universal that people feel that way. So oftentimes we go to great lengths to avoid that, avoid those looks, to bring them together. Like you talked about in the restaurant the other day, your instinct was probably to, well, geez, you know, how can I get around this? Because it's really, really blue and really, really yellow.
Yeah.
Sometimes you could basically, you know, if you were to shoot a movie in there, you would probably either gel the fluorescent lights to match the blue,
right?
Or you'd do some other things to sort of essentially match the light so that it wouldn't look so blue and yellow all at once,
right?
But why not embrace them? Why not take the situation and really make it work? So why would you want to shoot blue and orange in the same photo? I'll give you a hint. It starts with separation.
So that you could achieve some separation.
Good call. Good pull, Adam.
Well, I remember you talking way back when about, you know, shooting a scene where maybe it's includes some outside scenery, like in the wintertime, right, for the blue, mm-hmm. With a house and like a fireplace and maybe some candles and some all sorts of warm light. And it kind of gives you the idea of it's really cold outside, but it's really warm and happy and comfortable. And there's a family by the fireplace inside. So sort of gives you that feeling of both, right? Which we all know that feeling of it's cold and we can't wait to get inside by the fire.
Sure. And I think that's every, you know, cigarette ad set around a mountain resort is probably that image. You know, the mountain just after the sun sets is very blue, and then you're going to have the cabin where everyone's sitting around smoking menthols or something. Right. I don't know. I don't pay attention to the ads anymore, but that's every ad from the
70s. Sounds about right, yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's a very, very common theme. It also is great to separate your subject from the background in general, you know, using contrasting colors, but we'll get to that in a little bit. So a lot of people talk about how it's overdone in TVs and films, and I think it is. Like, if now that I mention it, you're going to notice it in almost every single movie and TV show that they make now.
Okay.
It's a really common technique. I don't think it's overdone, though, because it is really awesome. And how
is there a Halloween horror show going on over there?
There is. Yes. Yeah, my kid's very excited about baseball, actually. She's out working on her curveball.
Okay.
Yeah, with her left hand. Yeah. So how do we do it? How do we go about mixing these different colors?
Well, you tell me. Tell me.
Well, there's certain times where it's easy to do. Is you can look for certain situations where you can mix ambient light, like you just talked about, sitting in the restaurant, having the nice orange light or whatever it is. It's probably not fluorescent, or it's some kind of a weird fluorescent. Nowadays, it's hard for me to say because there's so many different flavors of fluorescent lights that it could be fluorescent.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. It was just really orange,
right? But now you have a situation where you can look for that situation where you have, you know, the evening, the sun has set already, and we got shadow cast outside, very, very blue. You have inside very, very golden. Look for those situations and make them work for you.
Right.
Okay. Go the other way, like we talked about with the mountain cabin, is be outside where it is blue and looking inside. You know, and anytime you can mix those, automatic. Okay. Now maybe you want to recreate this on your own. You don't want to use ambient light. This is where we bring in the gels for your flash.
Right.
Now you use this every once in a while, right?
Yep, I do.
So it's a situation of maybe you just go out. You're going to shoot outside in the blue where it already is blue, and you throw a orange gel on your flash and light just your subject.
Yeah, and it looks really cool when you do this.
It does. That's the thing, is people like to say, oh, it's overdone. Yeah, that's why.
Yeah.
Because it looks really cool. So that's a great way to do it. Now, you can decide on your white balance. Do you want it to ramp it up and have the background be normal color and your subject very orange? Or do you want to pull it back down and keep the background blue and have your subject be slightly orange? You know, right. like there's no right answer there.
You know what's the other cool move, and is to go with two flashes and gel one blue on one side and then one orange on the other side.
It's like, and you're a mind reader.
Yeah, that's freaking cool too.
And why is that cool? Tell us a little bit more about that, because that's the next thing I was going to talk about.
I just said it because it looks really, really cool.
Okay, so point being, then I'll try to sum it up. You can do. Let's say you have two flashes, and you want to just do, maybe you just do one orange and the other one normal, or you do one blue and the other one normal.
Okay.
Or you do one blue and one orange. These are all. I'm just outlining all your options.
Give us more combinations.
Or you can just put your flashes in your bag and go have fish and chips. That's another option.
I choose option E.
Yeah, you can go with that one. So that's the situation, is how much of a range do you want to go with? Do you want to use full orange, half orange, whatever it is? Again, that's really up to you. But where are some situations where you would like to do that? You know, if you have two flashes, are you talking about throwing an orange light on your subject and a blue light on the background?
Am I talking about that?
Yes.
I was using it in a scenario where I had a blue background, so I was, yep, by the water and there was a nice blue sky background, and that's the situation where I shot orange flash at the subject, which in this case happened to be myself when I was just tinkering around.
Mm-hmm.
and it made me look like a bronze god, which is cool.
Not hard to do.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And then I did try the sort of blue from one side just to kind of almost rim light me with blue.
Mm-hmm.
and then sort of orange on my leg and on my face in one shot, and I really like that effect too. So again, I think it helped to create separation and just a cool effect by going with the different lights, as opposed to all orange, which when I did it with two orange lights on the blue background, it just ended up looking fake,
right?
Like it literally looked like I was just a bronze statue, a really, really well conditioned one, but
right.
A bronze statue.
Yeah, that part's redundant, of course. So that brings us into the next. I'll skip ahead. Use this effect sparingly.
Yes.
Don't call attention to it. It's better to be a subliminal thing. You'll notice that the best uses of this are when it doesn't hammer you over the head with it, but you sort of, it creates a feeling that you don't know why. You don't know why you're feeling about like the cools and the warms and all these sort of interchangeable things. It's sort of hinted at. So that's one way to think about it. But now, if you're going to light your subject, like you said, do you have the key light orange and the fill light or the kicker blue? Or do you go the other way?
I think that's up to your creative control.
Good answer. But it's something to think about, because my instinct would be initially, would in most situations, would be, okay, I'm going to key light my subject with a warm light. Because warming lights make people look better, like a bronze god or something, whatever you say.
Yeah.
They do look good. There's a reason people use them. But maybe you want to go with another effect. Maybe you whatever it is that you want to do, you can figure it out. You're a big boy,
right?
try your key light being blue. Nothing wrong with that. So that's it. It's kind of a esoteric, I think that's a word, and I think it fits here. Topic this week, but it's something that maybe you don't always notice and don't think about. I want you to go out and sort of notice it in everyday life and think about how it applies to your photography. That's this week's topic.
Okay.
Whew. Check that one off the list.
Yep.
You have a challenge? I got a challenge for next week.
Oh, it's always you with your challenges.
Well, do you have one? If yours is the same one, then go ahead. What would yours be?
Mine is, it's Halloween. We got to do a jack-o'-lantern picture before Halloween so we can talk about it, so people can make great jack-o'-lantern pictures for Halloween.
Okay, that is better than mine.
What was yours?
Shoot a bronze god.
Done.
Yeah, yours already done. I was really handicapping myself there. Okay, good. Let's do yours. Let's do the pumpkin one. Oh, the okay. Jack-o'-lantern? Not pumpkin. It has to be jack-o'-lantern.
Right.
Okay. I can do that.
Yeah, it has to be. You can't just shoot a picture of a pumpkin.
Okay. So, Adam, where can people find your stuff?
As always, schwartzchronicles.com. And Al, for your stuff?
AlAndAttridge.com. Two of us at twohosers.com, where you can find the Twitters and the what have you. Everything you need to know. iTunes. Fish and chips. We can get that there, I think.
Great. P.S. My... you got to repost my video, my YouTube Halloween video, because it's up to 14 or 15,000 hits on YouTube. It's made 2 years ago of my, the 1 minute trailer. I think we posted it last year. The Tickle Monster. Tickle Monster is up to, I think, around 15,000 hits on YouTube.
I'll repost it. We'll try to get up to 15,010.
Yeah, no, let's hit, I want to hit 20 grand. It's Halloween season. This is where it really runs roughshod over all the other Halloween videos.
Okay, this is where you make your money.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Okay.
That's great. That's what I like, people, that's their business plan. I'll make a viral video and then make money from YouTube. All right. I've had people say that to me. Hey, you know what we should do? We should make a viral video. Okay. I don't know what that means. I know what it means. I don't know what a viral video is.
But make a video of your cat breakdancing.
Yeah, essentially. Yeah, I can has. And then you're sorted. Boom.
Yeah. You're a millionaire.
Three steps to millionaire. Yeah. So there's that. Twohosers.com. Go check it out. You can find everything you want to know. Anything else to add?
No, good. Nothing.
Get out there and make better photos, Adam. So for Adam, this is Alan saying get out there and make better photos.